May it please the Court, I'm here for the plaintiffs on 06-2218. Indiana has adopted one of the most, if not the most, restrictive voter identification laws for in-person voting currently in effect in the United States. The voter identification law imposes a severe burden on the right to vote without justification and is therefore unconstitutional.
Well, is it a severe burden for anyone who isn't poor?
Yes, Your Honor.
How so?
Well, Your Honor, the evidence shows that there are persons in the state of Indiana who currently do not have voter IDs or licenses, and it shows that for some people, not just poor people, obtaining the IDs is a difficult task because in order to get the BMV-issued ID, you have to have three types of documentation. You have to have a sealed original birth certificate, you have to have secondary documentation, and you have to have proof of residency. That's a lot of documents. There was a witness who testified, Ms. Andrews, who works for the BMV, that in a given week she sees 50 people who come in to try and get IDs. 60% of them are turned away because they do not have sufficient documentation. For some, the problem might be the birth certificate. There's a cost to obtain the birth certificate, but also in order to obtain the birth certificate, for instance, in Indianapolis, Marion County, you go to the Board of Health, you say, I'd like my birth certificate, they ask for photo ID. So there's a circular problem, and there's a cost. And for people out of state, the cost is higher. There's also a problem, which particularly affects, I think, homeless and poor people, about
what do you mean, people out of state?
People who were born out of state, excuse me, Your Honor.
Born out of state.
The testimony was it can take months to get an out-of-state birth certificate with increased costs. For someone who is homeless, for instance, who doesn't have the underlying documentation, it becomes almost a virtual impossibility.
Well, if he's homeless, he's indigent, isn't he? And if
That's
he's
correct.
Indigent, then there's an indigence exception, right?
Well, the indigence exception exists, Your Honor. It's unclear at this point exactly what the definition of indigency is and who it applies to. Moreover, in order to get to the indigency exception, you have to go to the polls, you have to be challenged, then you have to spend your time to then go back to the clerk's office and do an affidavit. There's no attempt by the state of Indiana to have anything at the polls that someone can sign and therefore satisfy their obligation at that point.
Well, how would you suggest Indiana deal with the problem of, you know, impersonation and so on?
Well, Your Honor, we can look at a number of things. We can look at how HAVA does it. HAVA says that if you have never appeared before a voter register before to register and you are voting either in person or by absentee and you do not have on record a social security number or a license number, you have to present some form of ID, but it's a wide range of photo identification as well as things having your address on it like paychecks or government benefits. That's one way. The other way, of course, is to get to the problem that Indiana said justifies this strict requirement. That problem is the bloated Indiana voter rolls. We heard repeatedly from the state that the reason Indiana is particularly subject to voter fraud is because our voting registration rolls are bloated. Well, after we filed our brief in this case, our original brief, the state was sued by the United States and entered into a consent judgment approved by the district court on July 5th, which has been submitted to this court, indicating the state concedes that it violated the National Voter Registration Act, concedes it was not purging the rolls, and agreed to do so. That is obviously a narrowly drawn response to this problem and would rectify the dangers that the state is
well, no,
complaining
it would
about.
It would rectify it from the for the past, but not going forward.
Well, it would assure the state that people coming forward are properly registered. The other thing, of course, Your Honor, is there's never
but
been...
I didn't understand that. If someone just shows up and says, I'm John Doe, what is Indiana going to do?
Well, in the past, what Indiana said is there might be a couple of John Does, the same John Does, registered in different places, and that would allow there to be fraud. Or there might be a dead John Doe, and someone comes in. Here, of course, once purged, you present yourself, you sign in, your signature can be compared, you are physically there, and you are subject to the Indiana criminal laws concerning voting fraud. There never has been...
Has there been anybody ever prosecuted under Indiana law for voter fraud?
Under absentee balloting, Your Honor.
Not under, well, absentee balloting is accepted here. But
that's correct, Your Honor. And the,
well, just regular enforcement of there's criminal sanctions in Indiana. Has anybody
correct.
Ever been prosecuted?
There's never been any examples of impersonation fraud. Now, that in and of itself does not prevent the state from legislating to address potential problems, Your Honors. But it does point out the fact that, as you note, it is in the area of absentee balloting where there has been fraud. In absentee balloting, the fraud prevention mechanism is the signature comparison. That's the only fraud prevention mechanism.
You could hardly have a... How could you have photo ID for absentee ballots?
Under HAVA, Your Honor, you can send in... If you are voting absentee and you have not appeared personally before voter registrar and you do not have your Social Security number or license on record, you can send in. You photocopy your ID and you send it in. I'm not saying that's the only answer, Your Honor. What I am saying is that the state has chosen to impose severe burdens on an area where there have not been documented problems. They've ignored the easy solution of purging the list, which they are finally doing now after being sued by the federal government. And there are going to be people in less than 3 weeks who are not going to be able to vote, who are going to appear without, either because they have forgotten their IDs or they do not have IDs, and they will be turned away. And that is a severe burden. And for these reasons, Your Honor, we believe that the trial court erred in denying the plaintiff's summary judgment.
There's a threshold question of standing that's been argued here. Which of your plaintiffs has the best case for standing? I assume you would argue the Democratic Party?
Well, I do not represent the Democratic Party.
Okay.
Mr. Groth and I am going to yield to him immediately. But I think the candidate, Representative Crawford, who is running in 3 weeks, who has been told at town meetings that there are people who do not have IDs, has standing. The NAACP, an officer of the NAACP, was told that they have members who do not have standing. Plus, the NAACP is now having to assume the burden of increased education and warning people about this law. So we would think those plaintiffs, as well as the others, have standing.
I don't understand how Crawford does, since the case is unlikely to be decided in the next 3 weeks, right?
Well, Your Honor, he has been a...
Does he run every 2 years or something?
He's been a representative since 1972, and he's run every 2 years, Your Honors. And Mr. Simpson is not running again, I believe, until 2008. And they are in the position of being candidates whose
voters... Any of the plaintiffs here people who have tried and failed to register?
No, Your Honor. The plaintiffs represent people who have indicated they do not have the identification, and they are groups that have engaged in expensive education and other efforts to try and prevent the effects of this law from disenfranchising people. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Falk. Mr. Groth?
May it please the Court. As the Supreme Court has stated many times in its history, a law which impinges on a fundamental right explicitly or...
Why are there two lawyers on your side, if I may ask?
There are two sets of...
Two lawyers.
Two sets of plaintiffs. There was...
The same issue, right?
Yes, it is the same issue.
Why have two briefs and two lawyers to argue the same issue?
Your Honor, if I might explain, we filed our suit in federal court on behalf of the Democratic Party. Mr. Falk filed a separate suit at about the same time, I think the same day or the day before, and that suit was consolidated.
Consolidated, one brief, one lawyer, right?
Right.
Why not?
Well, because I think, for one thing, Mr. Falk's organization is nonpartisan, and I think there might be some difficulties with respect to his organization filing a brief on behalf of a partisan organization, but I can't speak for him. That's my supposition. So we ended up going on parallel tracks, but we, I think, have somewhat different nuanced arguments.
So how does your argument differ from his?
Probably just in terms of emphasis in the briefs. I think we agree.
Okay, at your oral argument, what are you going to say different from him?
Well,
if you're just going to repeat what he says, it's pointless, right? So can you add something to what he said?
I'll be happy to reserve the rest of our time for rebuttal to Mr. Falk.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Gross. Mr. Fisher?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. It has always been the law in Indiana that voters must be who they actually claim to be. The only issue here is Indiana's means of enforcing that law.
Has there ever been anybody prosecuted in Indiana for impersonating somebody else at the polls?
I'm not aware of any, Your Honor, but the Baker-Carter Commission acknowledged that vote fraud, in-person vote fraud, is a problem around the United States. And the record is replete with examples from other states where there have been people voting in the name of dead individuals and duplicate voter registrations and just plain voting for somebody.
So there's no – are you saying that there are no available methods of enforcing this this fear of voter impersonation other than a this sort of a ID law?
This
traditional
law
enforcement is what we usually look to enforce criminal sanctions. And it's a felony, isn't it, in Indiana to do that?
It is, and the state's not required to wait for people to commit the crime and then prosecute them. This is a measure.
But how long has that law been in effect in Indiana?
Well, I don't know exactly, but certainly a long time.
And if nobody's ever been prosecuted, it just seems to me, where's the problem here? That
vote fraud's very difficult to detect. You don't know if you've got a fraudster after he leaves the polls, and you can't track somebody down if you suspect it's been committed. Now, Indiana has chosen a means here that balances the prevalence of the identification, which is probably somewhere close to 99%, according to the district court, with the security underlying the identification and the way that it can be used easily by the poll workers to be able to check identification. Now, in Griffin, the court
Falk emphasized was the cumbersomeness. If you happen not to have a driver's license, then you have to submit three separate documents to get your photo ID.
All of which, of course, is part of the security underlying and the usefulness of the identification itself. But there's nothing there that's...
Why wouldn't you settle just for the birth certificate?
It doesn't have a photo at the BMV or at the poll.
The birth certificate wouldn't have a up-to-date photo. That I grasp.
They have a footprint, though.
Well, this is part of the process of.
So one is the birth certificate, and the second is.
Second, you have to have a secondary document.
Your signature is that.
Well, you have to have something that shows your address, and also what they call secondary documents, which are more readily available. Now, I would add that
a secondary document would be something with your signature, or what?
Oh, I can't remember. I don't think so, Your Honor. I think it could be like a utility bill or something of that nature.
Well, something that shows your name and address, is that right?
Right.
Now, what's the third document?
The third document is, well, you can combine them in various ways.
Okay, so you could have a birth certificate plus a bill which showed your name and address.
I think so, yeah. And you could. It's all laid out in precise detail in the record, of course. But
I just want to understand this. If somebody comes to vote now in Indianapolis, let's say, and they do not present a photo ID, but they say, this is who I am, this is where I live, and they show you maybe a utility bill or something of that nature, you will accept a provisional ballot from that person?
That person can swear an affidavit that they are who they say they are.
Right.
They can cast a provisional ballot. Then they have 10 days.
And they have 10 days. Now, let's suppose you're born in North Dakota or something like that. So they have to then... You tell me what they have to do within 10 days to appear again, where, at City Hall or something like that?
They have to go back to the clerk of the court or the election board, and they have to get the identification. I don't know what North Dakota requires to get a birth certificate, or if maybe this person already has a birth certificate, maybe this person has other documentation, maybe they have a passport, maybe they didn't bring it with them that day. There are an infinite variety of ways that people can be tripped up when they go to vote, but we don't require government to constantly deregulate elections so that there are no costs associated with that effort. Now, the other example that came up is, what about HAVA? HAVA doesn't require photo identification, so why should we? Well, what's the principal distinction? They require the type of identification that Congress wanted for first-time voters. The Indiana General Assembly struck a different balance, saying, well, for people who are actually going to vote in person, whose faces that the poll clerks can see, we want something more. We're not asking them to go to the moon. We're just asking them to bring their licenses, which the vast majority of people have, and which nobody in this lawsuit claims not to have. Indeed,
do we know what percentage of people of eligible voters in Indiana registered voters in Indiana have no photo identification?
The best data we have on that was the data that was submitted with the Kimball Brace report that the district court looked at, and the identifications issued by the BMV, this is just state identification, mind you, not federal identification that would qualify, as a percentage of voting age population was 99%. Now, there are all kinds of caveats that go with that statistic, and the district court pointed them out, but that's the best we have in the record. That shows exactly...
You say none of the plaintiffs, none of the plaintiffs here do not have a photo ID?
Well, those who don't are eligible automatically to vote absentee, as it turns out. The elderly, for example, over 65, they don't...
I mean people who would be required to present their photo ID when they voted.
They have not identified anyone. Indeed, William Crawford, one of the lead plaintiffs, has photo identification. He simply doesn't want to have to show it when he shows up at the polls.
Crawford, the candidate, doesn't want to show his photo ID. I don't understand.
He claims to be offended.
Shy or something? It's an unflattering picture or what?
He's offended, I guess, is what he says in the deposition. I don't know exactly why, but that's the...
But you're saying no one, as far as the record shows, none of the plaintiffs has or lacks the photo identification?
That would be required to present it now. They brought forward a homeless individual. Well, there was no evidence that he was even registered in Indiana. Plus, again, the indigency requirement would allow him to be able to cast a provisional ballot and come back and swear to his indigence and be able to vote. This is a very narrowly tailored law.
If you're an indigent, you don't have to get your birth certificate?
No.
No, you because it would cost you something.
That's right, because there would be a fee associated
with
it.
Well, how do you handle the person that I mentioned who was born in North Dakota? He has to get a birth certificate from North Dakota. How does he get a free one within 10 days to then take to the Indiana Motor Vehicle Department, stand in lines and wait and get a picture ID?
Well, I don't know about North Dakota's requirements. I don't know how hard it is to get that. But 10 days is far longer than even the Baker-Carter Commission recommended for provisional voting, which was 48 hours. There's a generous opportunity here.
So if this law is upheld, then the people who want to vote would get their photo ID in advance, presumably, right?
That would be, I think, the logic behind it. Indeed, that one of the expert reports that we submitted
rather than trying to make the 10 days after you vote.
The impact of this law, to the extent it has any negative impact on some class of voters, are bound to be negligible over time as people grow used to it, as they get their photo identifications, as photo identification becomes more and more necessary for transactions in society generally, which it already is. To get into this building today, we had to show photo identification. This is something that is not an unusual requirement. It is well within the mainstream for just about any service that any individual could ever want. The idea that it's somehow a novel idea, I think, is completely contradicted in part by the expert testimony that the plaintiffs gave, which was from Marjorie Hershey from Indiana University, who said that this law is directly analogous to voter registration. Well, as it turns out, of course, voter registration costs some people the ability to vote. Some people are not registered. They don't know how. They can't get to the registrar's office. They can't get the materials. Whatever the reason, they are unable to vote as a result. They don't have a 10-day window to go and register after the election.
I take it Indiana doesn't have a registration at the polls provision?
No, you have to be registered 30 days in advance of the election. That has been a long-standing requirement. And the survey data submitted by Clark Benson shows somewhere in the neighborhood of 64% to 70% of the voting age population is registered. So a huge swath of the voting age population is apparently not registered, far greater than the percentage of that population that does not have photo identification of some sort. Now, as to the voting lists, we are not bound by one approach to solve the problem of preventing in-person voting fraud. It helps to
clean up. How does one purge a voting list?
It's much harder now than it used to be. It used to be that if someone was not voting in successive elections, you could purge them for that reason. But now, after the National Voter Registration Act and after HAVA, there are steps you have to go through where you have to mail them a postcard and try to confirm their address. And then after that, you can make them ineligible, and then a few elections after that.
I mean, do you have to write everybody who's who voted or what?
Well, yeah, that's the way that
thousands of people.
You have to send out postcards to thousands of people and wait for them to be returned.
What do you mean thousands, not to everybody.
No, I think you'd, in some circumstances, yes, you send it out to everybody. Maybe that's the all circumstances where you send it out to everybody. You see if it gets returned, and if it gets returned by the post office, you know that the address is bad. Then you follow up. It's a very cumbersome process, and it may or may not get all of the dead wood that's in the voter registration list. But even beyond that, of course, even if somebody's not trying to vote in the name of a dead person or somebody who has moved, the photo ID is important because it prevents people from simply showing up and presenting themselves in the name of another person who was a valid registrant, which can happen. And purging the voting list does not have any impact on that. Your Honor, I don't think I've got anything further. I think we've addressed everything I want to talk about, unless there are further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher. Mr. Falk and Mr. Groth, you have generous time, I'm sure, for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Let me ask you, Mr. Falk, about the criminal prosecution.
Yes, Your Honor.
How would you ever catch an impersonator? Because by definition, you know, he shows up, uses someone else's name, then he leaves. Well, how would you ever find that person?
Well, the question is, has the issue arose? Has there ever been a situation of someone coming in afterwards going to vote and the poll people saying, you've already voted, and them saying, oh, no, there hasn't been? In that situation, it would be required, I believe, under Indiana law, that would be referred to the prosecutor, and there's simply never been an example of that. And realistically, Your Honors,
it wouldn't be referred to the prosecutor. If someone comes in and says and starts to vote and the person says, no, you voted already, he'd say, oh, I'm very sorry, I forgot or something. They're not going to arrest him on the spot for attempted.
Oh, no, Your Honor. No, I'm saying the real person comes in secondly and says, this isn't my name, I didn't sign the book here. You have to.
But the first person, he's gone, right? The impersonator is gone. How on earth are you going to find him?
But Your Honor, there were no examples of that ever happening.
No, but how would it? Pardon?
The state didn't come forward and say this has happened X number of times and we couldn't catch the person because of the scenario you present.
Why should that be necessary?
Well, as I said in my opening argument, it is not necessary for the state to show this has ever happened because the state is allowed to look in the forward area. But the question is, Your Honors, when the state ignores the fraud, the clear fraud that has repeatedly occurred in absentee balloting, where the only fraud prevention device is signature comparison, and focuses on in-person voting, where there's never been an example of fraud, we have to ask, under Burdick, is this narrowly drawn to address the interests of the state in preventing fraud?
I'm not sure. I don't think narrowly drawn is correct, because I think you have voting rights on both sides of the case, right? Because the frauds infringe the voting rights of the legitimate people. It dilutes their votes.
Of course it does.
Now, what you're saying is that this fraud problem is very small. And what Mr. Fisher is saying is the photo ID problem is very small because you haven't, and maybe he's wrong, so I'm asking you, is he right that you haven't actually joined as a plaintiff anybody who doesn't have photo ID?
That's correct, Your Honor. The Democrats represent people who do not have IDs.
But by not even having found one of these people, it doesn't convey to us that there is, you know, substantial disfranchisement here. It would be nice to see one person in Indiana who says, I don't have photo ID, I'm not indigent, but, you know, this is very cumbersome. I'm not going to bother to get the multiple documents. That would be the perfect plaintiff, right? And then,
Your Honor,
there's nobody in Indiana in that position, that everybody who wants to vote. If you're over 65, you don't need it. If you're absentee, you don't need it. If you're indigent, you don't need it. And maybe that what is left, people who want to vote, don't have a photo ID, maybe there aren't any of those people.
Well,
then why would we upset the law, right? Because then we'd have, you know, a rather small abuse. That's your position. But correcting the abuse wouldn't disfranchise anybody.
Well, Your Honor, the AARP did a survey in Indiana, found that 3% of registered voters over the age of 60 did not have either IDs or...
Sure, but look, some of them are over 65, and they don't need an ID. And then there are a lot of people. Look, half the population doesn't vote even in presidential elections.
Oh, that's correct.
And the people who don't have photo ID, that's a somewhat unusual component of the population, because it's very hard to do much without a photo ID. Now, these people who don't have photo IDs, they may not be interested in voting, right? They're
But the AARP survey, Your Honor, was of registered voters.
Pardon?
The AARP survey of Indiana was of registered voters 60 and older. 3% had neither ID.
But, right. I'm sorry.
Neither had ID nor license, even though they were registered to vote.
I don't understand this. If you're, no matter how old you are, if you vote at the polls, you have to have photo ID.
Well, that's correct, of course. And
it's not that you're over 60 or 65.
Over 65, you can...
Old like Judge
Posner
and I?
Over 65, you don't need your photo ID, right?
You can apply to vote absentee, although, as this court has noted, there are definite advantages to being able to vote in person in terms of making up your mind the last time, not having, at last minute, not having to apply beforehand.
In Indiana,
you do have to apply beforehand to vote absentee. But the point is, of course, NAACP officer was contacted by persons who indicated, we don't have the identification. They are here as the organization representing their members. Representative Crawford was contacted by people who's at town meetings saying, we don't have the IDs. They are here in a representative capacity. The state argued in their brief that there's an infinite variety of ways that people can be tripped up. Well, that's not the point. That shouldn't be the point of voting. There should not be an infinite variety of obstacles to get in your way. Indiana has made it very difficult, if not impossible, for an admittedly small segment of the population not to be able to vote, or to be able to vote only with imposing a great burden.
Apparently, judging from their bloated rolls, they have a long history of voter fraud, and now they're going to purge the rolls. But that just restarts the clock, and then there's going to be a lot of more fraud. And if the criminal sanctions are not very effective, then maybe only the photo ID will prevent the problem.
My time is up. I just respond briefly. The long history is in the fraud in the absentee balloting area, and we can't lose sight of the fact that Indiana has reacted to the potential fraud that has never been found to exist in Indiana, in-person fraud, and ignored the area where there is fraud. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both sides. And, Mr. Groh, thank you for your forbearance. And the case will be taken under advisement.